Owning a small business can be overwhelming. How can your business stand out and connect with customers? Easy. Get Constant Contact. There's so many places to reach customers. Email, text messages, Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, live events. The list goes on. How are you, as the business owner, expected to own all of those channels? That's where Constant Contact comes in to help. With Constant Contact, you'll reach new audiences, grow your customer list, and communicate more effectively to sell more, raise more, and fast-track growth. I use this to grow my email list, and you should too. So get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Just go to ConstantContact.com right now. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall. ConstantContact.com.
The ultimate kibosh. And we are underway.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Action Network NFL podcast. It is the Week 14 Friday show. I am Matthew Friedman, the editor-in-chief of Fantasy Labs. And joining me to break down all of the games coming up this weekend is Chris Raybon, a senior editor and analyst at the Action Network and a co-host of I Will Take That Bet on ESPN+. You can follow him in the Action Network app at Chris Raybon. Chris, I don't know if you know this, but it is the season for giving. And with that in mind, we want to give away some free Action Network subscriptions to listeners. If you, the listener, want a shot at a free subscription, you have to do three simple things. One, follow Chris and me, as well as our co-host, Peter Jennings, Sean Corner, and Ian Harditz in the Action Network app. Two, rate and review the podcast on iTunes. And then three, send screenshot evidence of the follows and review to podcast@actionnetwork.com. That is the plural podcast@actionnetwork.com. And listen to future shows to hear if you are the lucky recipient. Okay, Chris, you did the Monday show with Ian. I did the Wednesday show with Pete and Oddsmaker, and Renee Miller was the guest. She was great. Be sure to give that episode a listen on the Action Network NFL podcast. Let's jump into it, and let's start, as we always do, with the first and five segment. We're going to break down the five games that right now are getting the most action in the Action Network app, the games that have the highest ticket counts. And we're starting with Ravens at Chiefs.
Wait.
What?
We don't have a tally? Like, what's our record on the year? You got to start out with the tally. We just go right in from the free sub. No,
yes.
We're no going, records?
We're, yes.
Ah, oh, come on. I know I'm off. I might be, you
probably are up. I haven't. I honestly stopped keeping track because it didn't seem – because there was, like, the one week when you were on during Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
And then, like – I forgot to, like, keep track, and then I just stopped.
Damn,
I forfeit if you want.
I want to see my own results too. But now I'm sure the listeners will have an idea of what's been going on. But fine, we'll start a new. This will be the final holiday run, the playoff run,
the playoffs,
wiping the slate clean.
Okay,
let's go.
Okay, all right. Ravens at Chiefs. Chiefs favored by 6.5, a 53-point over-under. The spread is down from 9. The Ravens are on the positive side of reverse line movement. The Ravens have won 3 games in a row with Lamar Jackson at quarterback. The Chiefs are still slotted into the number one seed in the AFC. Chris, what are your thoughts on this game?
So this is one of those games where you have a really good offense going against a really good defense in the Baltimore Ravens. I think if you're looking to bet this game, where I'm going is the under 53. And that's because the first thing I like to do in these situations is look at similar kind of matchups. So if you look at, you know, for the Kansas City Chiefs, they play the Jacksonville Jaguars, another team with a pretty good defense when it wants to be, as we saw last week, but not always. But Kansas City won that game 30-14. So that was a 44-point total. Kansas City also played Denver twice. Denver, one of the top defenses in the league as well. And, you know, both of those games, so 27-23 KC, that was a 50, and then 30-23 KC. So that was 53. So that's where the over-under is at right now. And then you even look at Baltimore last week, you know, going against a team like the Atlanta Falcons, who, especially at home, had been putting up, I think coming into that game, it was 30 points per game at home. And that was another game that went well under the total. So I'm liking the under in this game. I think that, you know, without Kareem Hunt, the one thing that he kind of brought that Spencer Ware and you know, all the guys that they're going to replace Hunt with don't bring quite as much is that explosiveness. You know, Hunt was hurdling defenders. He was really creating a lot of explosive plays. I don't think that will quite be there. And just in general, I think with Baltimore running the way they have, you know, they're running 48.3 times per game over the last three games with Lamar Jackson compared to 23.3 passes per game. Now, usually when you have a lot of runs, and especially if you expect the team to be successful running the ball, which I do expect Baltimore, because they KC is the worst team in the league at defending the run per DVOA from Football Outsiders. But it's a situation where there's, like, usually you expect the run to kind of set up the pass, and that's why, you know, the totals go higher. But in this game, Baltimore, I think, is just going to keep on running and running and running. I think you're going to see less time of possession than you're used to for Patrick Mahomes and these guys, and, you know, just not really confident that this game is going to quite make it over that total. So that's where I'm going with this one. I think the spread is interesting because it's like it's been hovering between 7.5 and 6.5. I think 7 is probably the right number. But, you know, I don't pretend to be able to kind of decipher what, you know, within those kind of, especially around that key number, when it's that close, I don't really feel that comfortable, you know, betting either side. I think I would go KC with it at 6.5, but Baltimore at 7.5. So I'm staying away from that, rolling with the under here.
Yeah, so I'm kind of conflicted on this one. So my bold call on the Wednesday show was that the Ravens would win this one outright. So I feel like I locked myself in by trying to be bold. I locked myself into like going on the Baltimore side of this. One thing that's interesting is that if you look in the matchup manifesto that Ian publishes each week at Action Network, there are two games this week that have two teams facing each other that play with a top 10 situation neutral pace. One of those games is Ravens at Chiefs, and then the other game is Colts and Texans. And so I hate taking the under on games with teams that tend to play fast, because I feel like I'm just, you know what I mean? Like, I'm just kind of exposing myself to the possibility of teams maybe just being more efficient. And then if they continue to play at that fast pace, they could hit the over. So I understand the logic for the under, but I think I'm going to stay away from it, but I'm going to go with Baltimore over 22.5 points for the team total. It's based a lot on the logic of what you've pointed out of the Chiefs being very weak against the run. And I think that's going to be something that the Ravens are going to be able to do against them very well. And even though they are running a very rudimentary offense, they're still like decently scoring points with it. Even if some of it is like set up with like, you know, short field position or whatever, like they're still able to score some points. And like, I think they are going to have that urgency of needing to score points against the Chiefs. So I'm going to take the over, but like, I don't have a strong lean on this game either way.
Yeah, I think the one thing that's interesting is that, you know, you mentioned like Baltimore, like the fast pace. I think it's such an outlier. Baltimore in general is just such an outlier that it's really hard to kind of handicap this, because it's like, in theory, yeah, like the fast pace, you know, helps all of this, but it's like Baltimore is essentially speeding up to run, which keeps the clock going anyway. So it's like, right, it's just such an outlier. But I do feel you. But one thing you always like to bring up is that, you know, when you're in Arrowhead, you know, the Chiefs tend to play better on defense. That's been the case throughout the Andy Reid era.
Yeah.
So, you know, the under in the Andy Reid era for the in Arrowhead is 29-15-1. That's a 60.
It's the best home under in the league. I don't know why I'm not taking the home under.
And it's 3-1-1 this season. So I mean, I'm with you. Like, it's really difficult to kind of handicap this game and say confidently, like, Chiefs, you know, plus 6.5, or Ravens, you know, whatever, you know, plus 7.5. But yeah, I think for me, it's just I'm sticking with the under. The one thing I'm scared about, I think, like, if you're betting on the Chiefs, that I think you feel good about is that, again, like, it didn't kind of happen with the Falcons, but the Falcons are, like, as Chad Millman always says, like, they're just heartbreakers. Like, they break your heart over and over. But I think the one thing with Baltimore to be concerned about is that, like, if the Chiefs can get a lead in this game, it kind of changes things, because then the Chiefs can rush the passer. Then that run defense is not quite as important. Or if the Baltimore keeps on running from behind, are they going to be able to catch up? Like, is that going to be enough, even with that run defense, to catch up? So I think, like, that's the only thing, reason, like, I would probably kind of feel good about the Chiefs at that number. But, yeah, it's really tough.
Yeah. I mean, the one thing is that even if Lamar Jackson does run, he's basically been as efficient as a runner as he has been as a passer. Like, it's, you know, it's like this situation where it's almost like a best case scenario for him, like to run when the team is expecting him to pass. You know what I mean? So, yeah, we'll see. But I think you're on the sharp side of taking the under at Arrowhead. That's just something that you should almost be automatic. Okay. Next game, Saints at Buccaneers. Saints favored by 9, a 56-point over-under. The spread is up from 8. The total is down from 57.5. The Saints are coming off a heartbreaking Thursday night football loss. The Bucs have won 2 straight with Jameis Winston in the starting lineup. This is a rematch of the Bucs 48-40 week one victory. Of course, Jameis Winston was not in that game. This game being played in Tampa, there is the possibility of precipitation. So people should definitely be sure to monitor that as game time approaches. Chris, what are your thoughts with this game?
So this game, really reminiscent of, I think, the Saints-Cowboys game last week, where it was, you just felt like the total was a little bit high. I think that this is a situation where you're late in the year and, you know, these teams have kind of put all of these stats on paper, but some of them, like from earlier in the year, aren't quite as relevant. So, for example, Tampa Bay had this 9-game stretch after the Saints game in week one where they turned the ball over 29 times in 9 games. Now, you know, that created a lot of, you know, quarterback back and forth and benchings and whatnot. But the bottom line is that's a ridiculous outlier. Like, that's just hard to sustain no matter how bad of a ball security type of team you are. So that was an outlier. That tends to drive up scoring turnovers because it creates short fields. Sometimes they get returned for touchdowns and there's not even, you know, not much time goes off the clock. So that's one thing that kind of drove up totals in these Bucs games. And then on the New Orleans side, you know, in the first few weeks of the season when they didn't have Mark Ingram, they a lot more run heavy. So you know, once they got Ingram, once he came back, New Orleans is averaging 33.5 rushing attempts per game and only 28.5 passing attempts per game. Now, they are efficient for the most part running the football, but that's just going to create a little bit more of a, you know, from the way New Orleans plays, because they're already efficient through the air, they're going to be efficient through the air no matter what. Just kind of limiting their pass attempts like that actually does, I think, lower the totals in some of their games. And, you know, we kind of saw that play out with the Cowboys game. And so I think you have a situation where this over-under at 56, still a little bit too high. I see why it dropped from 57.5 where it came out. If you go back to 2005, when two divisional opponents play in week 11 or later, and the total's above 44, the under is 169, 104, and 3. So that's a 62% hit rate. You know, so you have all these kind of trends. There's also, like you said, there might be precipitation, might be some wind. So I'm going with the under here. It's my favorite bet. I wrote it up in the Action Network favorite staff bets for this week. Bucks, Panthers over under. The under in that game last week was my favorite bet. So I'm going right back to the well here. I think this total is inflated.
Yeah, I can see the logic in that. And I think that especially because New Orleans is involved in this game and, you know, people see this high scoring offense, they would maybe be interested in looking at the over. I don't know if I can go on the under just because you have two defenses that I think are pretty exploitable, and you have two offenses that are really good at scoring points. And like, if I took the under and it went against me, I think I would just look at that and be like, how did I take the under? Like, why did I take the under? Even though, like, I know that you have two divisional opponents facing each other late in the season, like, it's always sharp to take the under. And this is like, even though we are on pace for the highest scoring season in league history, unders are still hitting more than overs, especially if you look after the first month of the season. Unders are hitting. So, like, it's sharp. I can't do it. But one thing I can do is I feel – and, like, it's correlated. Like, I can take the Bucs at plus 9. If scoring is low, that increases the odds that the Bucs are going to cover. And you have 81% of the tickets, 84% of the money on the spread backing the Saints. I think that's too high for a few reasons. One, because these are teams that, you know, are divisional opponents. They are familiar with each other. And granted, it was a different time. You had Fitzpatrick playing in week one, no Mark Ingram. But the Bucs have already beat the Saints once this season. Like, it's not inconceivable for the Bucs to lose by only 8 points in this game. especially since they are at home. I'm going to take the Bucks. I think they have enough offense to be able to cover. So I'll do it.
This is a fascinating kind of case study of all the stuff we kind of preach here at Action Network in terms of the market-based stuff and kind of going against the public, but then also like all the biases that I think Bales really kind of brought to the forefront in a bunch of his books earlier, a few years ago, but like recency bias and whatnot. Because so the Bucks, their defense has played a lot better over these last few games, aside from the Giants game, but they allowed 16 to Washington, then they gave up the 38 to the Giants, then they allowed 9 to the 49ers and 17 to the Panthers, right? But it's interesting because when you look at it a little deeper, it's like I mentioned that 9-game stretch where they were turning the ball over so much. So, in that same 9-game stretch, I mean, they gave up ridiculous amounts of points on defense in almost every one of those games. So in these last two games, they've only turned the ball over on offense once, and they've allowed 26 combined points. Meanwhile, their defense has gotten 6 turnovers, right? So it's obvious that their offense and defense work together. Like if their offense is not turning the ball over, it's easier for them to play defense. And if they're getting turnovers, their offense is better. But in this game, I don't think the Saints, Drew Brees threw what? It's like his third interception. I think it was of the season last week. So that's the only reason why I'm staying with the total is it could be a situation where we're kind of recency biased because we just saw the Saints come back down to earth, as we knew they had to eventually. They couldn't continue to sustain that kind of touchdown efficiency through the air on such limited pass volume. But now I almost worry that we're going to underestimate the Saints could just go in here and smash. Just smash the Bucks.
It's totally possible.
And their defense is playing well.
It's possible. They're playing with extra rest, have more time to prepare. If the Saints crush, it wouldn't be a surprise. Okay, next game here. The Broncos at the 49ers. Broncos favored by 4, a 45.5 over-under. The spread is down from 5.5. The total is up from 44. The Broncos have won 3 straight games. They are fighting for a 6th playoff spot. However, they are without some pretty key players. They have lost cornerback Chris Harris and recently wide receiver Emmanuel Sanders. The 49ers have lost 3 straight games and are in the running for the number 1 overall pick. Chris, what are you doing with this game?
I think you got to go. I think you got to bet on San Fran here, man. And this is not even – this has nothing to do with my prior disdain for Vance Joseph. I say prior because I think he has done a good job over these last few weeks, getting some key wins to get the team back in the playoff hunt. But I think that there's just such a small margin of victory, between winning and losing in the NFL, especially when you're talking about 2 non-elite teams. And Denver, I mean, we kind of underestimate it, or maybe not us, but in general, I think it kind of goes overlooked a little when it's not like a quarterback or a pass rusher or a marquee star player gets hurt or is out of the game. It goes a little overlooked, but Emmanuel Sanders is a huge loss for this offense because it almost reminds me of the Golden Tate loss for Matthew Stafford, where, everyone's kind of all right, whatever, receivers aren't moving the lines, this and that. But in reality, Golden Tate was responsible for 27% of Stafford's targets. And Emmanuel Sanders is similarly, integral to this offense. He's 23% target share. Really the only guy that can get open here. So without Sanders, without Chris Harris, this is just a team that, may or may not be well coached. I'm not, jury's still out, with, poorly quarterbacked, not really much outside of Philip Lindsay, that you can hang your hat on, and the pass rushers, which in a game where I don't know if they're going to need the pass rushers. So it might not be that kind of game. So on the road, I think it's a toss up. I think Denver has the edge. I think Denver, you would say Denver should win this game, but on the road, plus 4, anything more than, I would say a point to me is too much. So I'm just going to go San Francisco here. I think San Francisco is well coached enough. And with the 2 key injuries for Denver, I just think the talent for these 2 teams is a lot more equal than it would have been otherwise.
Okay. I hear you. You probably saw in this while you were talking that I changed my pick. So this is what my original pick was, and then I changed it, and now I'm changing it back. I'm going opposite you. I'm going Denver. And I'm taking the fishy side on this. I know. You're on the sharp side. I know that. I don't care, obviously, which is why I suck at this game. But from a real perspective, I wouldn't touch this game. I don't feel confident enough in it. But if I had to bet it, there's no way I'm betting on the team that wants to lose, and that is San Francisco. They are starting their fifth string running back, their third string quarterback, and they are as incentivized as any team could be not to win. Okay, and then you have Philip Lindsay, who I think pretty highly of. You have him on the other side. Deshaun Hamilton, I know like he didn't play earlier in the year. He can't be Emmanuel Sanders, but like he's a pretty polished guy, like for a rookie. Like he's pretty polished. I think he's going to slot in into Emmanuel Sanders' old spot. Courtland Sutton is going to be able to run routes against anyone else besides Richard Sherman, because Richard Sherman doesn't move, right? So if they're smart, they will just line him up against anyone else.
That's the question. You are with me here. I know, but they are smart. Like if this was like,
I know, but even if they're stupid and they put Sutton against against Richard Sherman for some of the time, like it doesn't mean they have to throw to him. Like is Case Keenum, and then you have the defense, right? Like Denver's defense, I think is pretty good. I trust them to be able to limit a third string quarterback and a fifth string running back and a really uninspiring group of wide receivers. So then it's like, is Case Keenum on his side of the ball? Like, can he abuse this San Francisco defense? I think he can do enough given Sutton and given Lindsay. Really, it's given Lindsay. I think Lindsay could have a massive game.
I mean, yeah, I'm with you on Lindsay. I think Lindsay is their best hope of offense, but like, I just don't see the, like, San Francisco with, you know, Nick Mullins or whoever, I just don't think this, there's like such a separation between these teams to be like, to be laying points for a road team. Like, I mean, these are big losses though. We'll see how it plays out. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if San Francisco got like demolished, but I wouldn't be surprised if Denver lost this game outright either, like straight up lost the game, which is why I'm betting San Francisco.
I don't want to be on Vance Joseph's side of this, but I, like, there's no way I want to be on the side of the team that has every motivation to lose.
But you know, I forget who was talking about this. I think it was I don't know if it was Jeff Schwartz over here at Action Network or who it was, but I think it might have been him talking about tanking though. It's like,
Players think differently, but
right. Like, you're not tanking on the field. Like, they're tanking in the sense that like they have a third string quarterback out there. Right. And they have a third, but the players on the, like, this is no, like, the players are still going to be playing hard. And what I'm saying is, like, when these players play hard, they're no worse than the team that the Broncos are fielding, except that pass rusher and at like running back, which we know, like, you know, that is
and a quarterback. At quarterback, they are worse.
Nah.
Keenum, say what you want about Case Keenum. He is better than a third string, undrafted, second year guy making his fourth career start.
I don't know about that because, all right, let me not trash Case Keenum like that. What I'm trying to say is, Shanahan coached quarterback with a decent O line in a game that shouldn't get out of hand and put them in obvious vulnerable situations at home. Like, they're a lot more equal than you think. That's what I'm trying to say. Like,
who on this defense is going to stop Philip Lindsay?
I mean, it's not a one man. I don't know. Like, it's not a one man. Like, he's gonna, but he gets off. Like, he's been getting off. To be fair, he's been getting off all year. Like, in wins and losses, win, loss, or draw, Philip Lindsay has been going off. I mean, he's been one of the most consistent fantasy players in the league this year. So, like, yes, Philip Lindsay is going to have a huge game because they're going to have to feed him. I would guess they get the other backs more involved as well, because who are you really throwing to? But I'm just saying, there's such a small margin with these teams. And, like, on the road, in this kind of situation where you lost essentially one of your top two players on defense and your best receiver.
Yeah, best receiver, yeah.
It's tough.
But yeah.
I feel all right. We'll see what happens.
All right. Well, we're going to head to head on this, so we will see.
You better get these results tallied though for next week. People are going to want to know.
I'm highly motivated to do that. Yeah. All right. Colts at Texans. Texans favored by 4.5. A 49.5 over under. The Colts are coming off a loss. They won five games before that, including a 29-26 Week 10 victory over the Jags, who won last week, but had lost seven straight games beforehand. man. I mean, what do you do with this game, Chris?
I mean, you know how I feel about the Texans. I still think the Texans are a very sneaky team in the AFC because I think they have, you know, the key ingredients to pull an upset over one of these other AFC teams in their house. So, you know, they have a quarterback that, you know, not only is just an all-around awesome quarterback, but one that also has, you know, the key attribute of being able to move around and get out of pressure. And, you know, their offensive line is not very good, but he can mitigate that because he can move around if he needs to. Then you have a receiver, like just a top-tier stud receiver, DeAndre Hopkins, who, by the way, 70% catch rate this year with him and Watson. His previous career high doesn't even hit 60 unless you round up. So, you know, they're doing it on another level. You know, even without Will Fuller, you know, Watson has sustained his efficiency. It's on lower volume, so it might go a little bit unnoticed, but, you know, his yards per attempt is still up there. Hopkins' efficiency is still up there. And then you have, on the other side, you have a defense with, you know, Clowney, Watt, defense that's been getting better against the pass, started out the year as a pass funnel, above average now against the pass, top three against the run. So, you know, I really like Houston. That being said, in this game, these like spreads in the middle of field goal and touchdown are ones I don't really like to touch. I think that maybe if the Colts don't play quite as badly last week, the over-under is a little bit higher. Right now it's at 49.5.
Yeah.
I think there's some value there because last time these two teams played, 37-34, Texans victory in overtime. You know, the Texans are a team that I think are going to be able to put up some points on the Indianapolis Colts. You know, the Colts have given up only 16 and a half points per game over their last six games, but they face Buffalo, Jacksonville twice, Miami, Tennessee, Oakland, right? So not exactly a bunch of powerhouses. I think Houston can do some damage against the Colts defense. And on the other side, I think, you know, the Colts, you know, not playing Jacksonville, I think that they'll be a little better. The game is, you know, in Houston. It's not, there's no real elements or anything involved in this one. I think you see them rebound. But I do want to kind of get your thoughts. I guess after talk about this game, just a little bit about, like, I think we talked a couple of weeks ago about the division race, and, you know, I think you feel like the Colts are still the better team. So I wanted to get your thoughts on that as well. Just like, do you still feel that the Colts are like the best team in this division? How do you feel about the Texans?
Yeah. So what you mentioned there earlier about value on the over, potentially because Indianapolis really laid an egg last week. I'm entirely with you there. And I think that the value in the over is almost entirely with the Colts, which is why I'm looking for the Colts at over 22.5. But to the question of this division, I mean, I don't know. I still don't look at the Texans and think that they do any one thing well. Like, I don't know. Like, I know that they're 9-3. So, like, tied with the Patriots, amazingly, you know, like, they are in the running to get the number two seed. I just still don't look at them as a team that is that good.
Like, what is it holding you back? Because, like, all right, like, is it Deshaun Watson? Because, like, Deshaun Watson to me is, like, already one of the, like I look at Deshaun Watson as one of the few quarterbacks that, like, they could go into Arrowhead and have a chance to beat the Chiefs because they have Deshaun Watson, and he can, like, be Patrick Mahomes for a game. Like, he's not Patrick Mahomes every game. He doesn't have Tyreek Hill. He only has one guy, like, you know, but, like, he can be that guy. Like, we saw it last year when their defense was horrible.
It's not Deshaun. A lot of it is just, like, they've won close games, and I think there's some flukiness there.
That's fair.
And, you know, without Will Fuller to stretch the offense, I think they are fairly limited. You know how, like, the Cowboys 2 years ago were winning games, and, like, at the end of the season, it's like, oh, they're the number one seed. And then it's not as if they got smashed.
They lost by an amazing play by a future Hall of Famer.
Yeah, I know, but it's just like then it's like the next season, they were like a pretty mediocre team.
It's not the next season yet, though. It's still this season. Like, all I'm saying is, like, the Jaguars went into Foxborough last year. If their offense, not even on Blake Bortles, if their offensive coordinator doesn't, like, mind screw himself out, you know, out of that game by remembering that he has Blake Bortles, like, they probably win that game. Like, I think it was Deshaun's second start of his career. And I think that game was without Will Fuller, if I'm not mistaken. They lost by 3 points to the Patriots in Foxborough. So, like, I don't I get the one score win thing. I think that's a sharp way to look at it because, you know, one score wins are, you know, historically 50-50. You could go either way. But I mean, just from like the talent that this team has, or at least the star power that this team has, which you know is going to come to play in the playoffs. Like, I think this team on any given Sunday can beat any team in the league.
I don't think that's true. Like, look at who they've played. Like,
that's not their fault. Like, I know
that's not their fault, but that still it still reflects on them. Like, their wins are overtime against the Colts by 3. Like, that could have gone either way. Against the Cowboys in overtime by 3. That could have gone either way. And then it's like, congratulations, you beat the Bills. You beat the Jags. You beat the Dolphins. You beat the Broncos. You beat the Redskins in a game in which, like, their quarterback broke his leg. You beat the Titans and you beat the Browns.
But those are all, I think,
basic non-entity teams.
That's fair. But at the same time, one of the common things about all of those teams that you also mentioned are all those teams have also been better than like, you would think. You know what I mean? Like, all those teams, like the Redskins, the Titans, like, all those teams, even the Bills, like, they've all been better than, like, what we thought. Or what we would, you know what I mean? So it's like, yes, I get it. The Texans haven't been tested, but like their talent is so high end that it's not like I would expect them to all of a sudden come down to earth. It's like they've been lucky enough to have a schedule that they can win and get a really good playoff spot, which helps them even more, which helps their case even more when you talk about them advancing far into the playoffs. Because if they get a home game or two, I mean, that's just more likely for them to win and advance.
I might be wrong on this because I'm not wrong on this. Not one of the teams, the Bills, the Jags, the Dolphins, the Broncos, the Redskins, the Titans, the Browns, not one of those teams is above 500.
They're not, but they're also all like, they're all like 500 and better than we thought. Like, they're better than we thought they were. You know, like the Redskins, you look at them and you're like, oh, they're not going to be good. Like the Titans, same thing. Bills, same, like all those teams are still like above expectations. So like whenever people are like, oh, the Texans have beaten these bad teams, like, yes, they're not that great, but they're still better than public perception, which means the Texans are likely better than public perception as well. I don't know. I'm just saying Deshaun Watson, J.J. Watt, Jadeveon Clowney, and DeAndre Hopkins, you can't count a team like that out.
Yeah. Okay, so here's the thing. I don't want to back the team that I think has won 9 games in a row in a really fluky way. Like, I don't want to back that team. At the same time, I don't really want to bet against them because it's like, well, I'm going to look like the idiot when they win their 10th game in a row. But I feel confident in the Colts' ability to score points. So okay, that's where I'm going.
But
if I had to choose a side, I would absolutely take the Colts plus 4.5.
What did you make of them kind of – because I think we talked about this maybe a couple weeks ago in the same conversation. But like Andrew Luck with that you know, like unsustainable touchdown rate. What do you make of that, you know, going forward? Because like to me it kind of looks like a high ceiling low floor situation where like we kept thinking of Andrew Luck's target depth and like it's to do with his shoulder, right? And it's like, oh my god, like his yards per attempt as well, because he started the year he wasn't throwing deep. I'm starting to look at this and think it's not as much to do just with his shoulder as like his supporting cast is like historically bad.
Oh,
outside
it's bad.
Right,
it's bad.
And like Eric Ebron, it's like okay, why is he having this amazing season in Indianapolis? Like, it's not just because Eric Ebron had this like rebirth. It's like by default.
Yeah, that was entirely the investment thesis for Ebron entering the season, was that the team was so bereft of wide receiver talent that they would basically need to use him as a glorified wide receiver.
It's amazing because like I looked at the numbers and. So they have T.Y. Hilton, who's averaging a 5-year low in yards per catch, 14.8. Good for normal receiver, not good for T.Y.
Yeah.
And then you have Ebron at 10.9 yards per catch. There's 8 other players who have been targeted at least 15 times on the Colts besides those two guys. None of them average even double digits yards per reception. So it's like Luck's yards per average depth of target is like 7.3. That's in line with Drew Brees, Aaron, like all these other quarterbacks that – have like high yard per attempt figures. The real issue is that these receivers haven't created anything to help out Luck. So like this, this is a really, I think, fascinating situation of like how long can Luck play out of his mind? Because I think everyone's going to kind of pin it on Luck if the offense starts to slow down. And in reality, it's not even on Luck. It's on like Ryan Grant and like you realize that Dontrell Inman, they picked him up in like week 5 and he's like their number 3. Like that, like that should tell you all you need to know. Like Chester Rogers was catching like 9-10 balls for them. This dude played like I don't even know if he got to like 20% snap rate last week.
A guy named Zach Pascal was doing something for his team at some point.
They
have a lot of just non-entities at the receiver position. And if you factor out the first 3 weeks of the season when Luck was really avoiding any downfield throws, if you factor those out, his ADOT from weeks four to now is very much in line with what you saw out of him before the shoulder injury. So, I mean, I don't want to say that he's like totally back to himself, but like we're not seeing something all that far from the Luck that we saw pre-injury. I think the big difference, as you mentioned, is just the receiving talent around him.
They're number two in third down rate, but what happens when you don't hit those third downs? You're just going at such a, like, your yards per attempt is low, so that means it takes you, it's just harder to catch up. And they're also number 27 on fourth down. So like it's so illustrative of like what happens if Luck doesn't play out of his mind. Everything just goes.
Okay, the fifth game, Panthers at Browns. Panthers favored by 1.5 points, a 47 over under. The spread is up from a pick. The Panthers have lost four straight games. The Browns are still relevant at 4-7-1, playing at home for the first time since week 10. What are your thoughts here?
I mean, first of all, this is not just our fifth game. This is the game that you guys out there, the listeners, that they chose as the fifth game. So shout out to all y'all. Thank you for listening all year. We're going to try to keep doing these for the rest of the season and going forward, just getting you guys more involved in what we talk about on here. So be sure to tweet Matt and I any suggestions or any feedback you guys have as far as that goes. But as far as this game, so this is the game that, you know, from a narrative standpoint, some people think that Ron Rivera has to win or he's going to get fired. I don't personally think that. I wouldn't bet on Rivera being the next coach fired. Either way, I would still go Todd Bowles. But I mean, I'm in New York. I see what's going on. It's just hard to find a reason, enough justification to whatever. That's a whole nother game. Anyway, in this one, the first thing that's interesting is that there's two opposite kind of funnel defenses situations going on. So the Panthers are number 28 in efficiency against the pass per Football Outsiders DVOA, and they're number 8 against the run. On the other side of the ball, on the other team, excuse me, you have Cleveland. They're number 4 against the run. They're number 4 against the pass, excuse me, and number 26 against the run. So that's kind of interesting. Panthers, you know, you can throw on them. Browns, you can run on them. I think that does favor. Well, first of all, I think Baker Mayfield's played, you know, kind of getting Hugh Jackson out of there has really kind of helped Baker Mayfield. One thing that I think that's really interesting with Mayfield is that, and it's not been the greatest thing for fantasy, but he's spreading the ball around a little more. Like their leader in Justin Bailey of Fantasy Labs Action Network just tweeted out that, you know, like the targets rates since Freddie Kitchens took over. And what you see is like the top receiver for them, it's still Jarvis Landry, but his target rate is down in like that low 20s as opposed to it was like up near 30 previously. So they're spreading the ball around a lot more. But in this one, I still think Carolina is the better team. I think that if there's ever kind of like a narrative situation, I would kind of go with Carolina here. I think they are kind of feeling desperate. I think they are feeling like they need to get this one for their head coach. And the fact that Cleveland's weakness has been against the run plays right into Carolina's hands because, of course, you have Cam Newton now. I know he popped up on the injury report, so maybe he doesn't want to run quite as much in this game. But you still have Christian McCaffrey, who's been, I think, exceeded all expectations when you consider the workload that he's received this season. I mean, he's playing. There's games where he barely comes off the field for a snap. So, especially when C.J. Anderson's gone. So I think that this favors Carolina. And then there's also some of the market-based stuff as well that favors Carolina because they have lost four games straight. They have failed to cover in four games straight. And John Ewing over at the Action Network, you know, he always does a great job, you know, unearthing these trends for our betting guys, which are – I always love to read them just as like a gut check on, you know, try to get my biases out of here and before I do a lot of things in fantasy as well. But teams that have lost four games straight, straight up and against the spread, are 49-32-1 when they're on the road in their next game against the spread. So that's a 61% hit rate. And when those teams are favored on the road, they've been 8-1 against the spread. So there's a lot of things I think that kind of favor Carolina in the spot. And also, as you probably will point out as well, their last three losses after that Pittsburgh blowout were by one score, 2019 against Detroit, 30-27 to Seattle, and 24-17 to Tampa Bay.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if I really have much to add. I'm with you on the side of Carolina 1.5. Yeah, those three last games. I mean, there was no way they were winning on Thursday Night Football against the Steelers. Like, once that game started, that wasn't close. But their three games after that, they could have won all those games. Like, I think they're better than a 6-6 team. And I think the Browns are basically exactly what their record says they are. You know, like, they're around a 4-7-1 team, you know? Like, they could put up a fight. You could see how they could win this game. But, you know, 1.5 points, I think the Panthers are the better team. You know, they're more incentivized. Like, not only are they playing potentially for the head coach's job, but like they still have a shot at the playoffs, you know? So I'm going with them.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, anytime you're looking at a 1.5 point spread, I mean, I think if you like, what's the probability of a team that's favored by 1.5 winning, like 53 or something like that? It's definitely a close game. But going back to that Steelers loss that you knew they were going to lose, would you say that was because of a certain number one receiver that was playing on the Steelers?
No, we're not even. I'm saying once that game started, like that wasn't a close game the way that the others were close. And let's not even. I mean, if we want to have a conversation about Antonio Brown, like I've been on too many podcasts about Antonio Brown. But I'll say it. I feel we're not even in the Steelers section of the show. But like, I'll say it. I think I'm going to be on the right side of that one. Like, as weird, as backwards as this sounds, that Antonio had like only 150 yards and a touchdown in the smash spot of like 13 targets, home favorite, primetime, non-divisional opponent. Like, 2 years ago, that is a bigger game. He's still having the least efficient season of his career. And the thing is, like, he's probably going to slay this week. He's going to slay the week after that. Like, his closing schedule is ridiculous. So, like, I'm going to end up looking like a donkey. And maybe I was a donkey, but, like, that doesn't change the fact that, like, this is like the canary in the coal mine. Like, there is legitimate danger here. Because, like, if at some point it's like there's, like, a stool with, like, three legs. And one of those legs right now is really wobbly, and that's his efficiency. And like, at some point, that can impact his volume and his touchdown potential. So like, if at some point he starts to get fewer targets and or fewer targets in the end zone or in the red zone, like, it's going to go like from everyone thinking that Antonio Brown is the top receiver in the league to everyone really quickly realizing he's maybe like the 18th best guy. And like, we're maybe a year away from that. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And I do know what you're saying. I think we should talk about this. If we have to go a little faster at some other point in the show, so be it. But I think it's an important conversation. I think it's an interesting one. And I think it brings to light, like, okay, the one thing I think I thought about when, like, after the fact was that, like, you're comparing kind of his efficiency to others on the team, right? And one thing I was thinking about that was like, but now that I think about it, like, so like his effect, it's kind of like the Tyreek Hill effect, right? Like,
right.
What did Tyreek Hill do against the Raiders? Like, on the, like a one catch or something like that. He didn't have a big stat line, but like, they put up 40 points. Mahomes, you know, threw the ball well. So it's like, you almost can't compare his efficiency to like the others on his team, because just his presence in the lineup would probably jack up their efficiencies, because he's always by default going to be the double covered, triple covered guy. So by nature, his degree of difficulty is already probably the highest in the league. But also, so like, yard per target, and this got me too, because it got me with Corey Davis, where like, I knew that Corey Davis was like a talented receiver, but because he had produced so many garbage yard per target games back to back to back to back, I think I started to think less of him, like, subconsciously, even though there wasn't really any issue with him. And it, like, yards per target, like, as opposed to like yards per route, and those, they stabilize quicker, but yards per target, I believe it takes like 205 targets to stabilize. So like, it could very well be like noise or Big Ben, because the Steelers also pass a lot. Right. So, right.
Yeah, they, like, pass more than any other team in the league.
So another thought I had, like, more of like a devil's advocate, is like, a wasted target to Antonio Brown might be less wasted than the average NFL target, because number one, it's probably on average coming a little earlier in the downs, because Pittsburgh just passes so much. So like, they're more liable to pass on first down and pass on second and still have another one down or two downs to make that up. And then number two, it's like an incomplete target to Antonio Brown still like kind of has that same effect I was talking about before, where it's still like, you're showing the defense that you're going to target this guy covered open. Right. whatever.
Yeah.
And then Juju Smith-Schuster gets single coverage and he could just run away from somebody. Or like Justin Hunter's wide open in the end zone. Of course, Ben Roethlisberger misses him, which is why I think there is definitely some kind of – like I think there's a lot of things at play here. I think that obviously Antonio Brown at this age is not going back to 2014 Antonio, but I'm just not sure that to me he's still the best receiver in the league, and I feel like to you I don't think he is, right?
No, I think he's pretty clearly not the best receiver in the league at this point.
But how is that clear? Just because of efficiency? Because like I feel like putting up like these kind of numbers with this volume, like regardless of efficiency, like I know some players they just force fed the ball and it's inefficient. Like the Steelers offense is like they're putting up points. You know, Big Ben's numbers are there. Like the receivers around him, like you said, are doing well probably because of him. Like I haven't seen the drop off to where I say that he isn't. I don't think really anyone's changed their game that much this year. I mean, if the one guy I would say that like if you want to make that argument would be DeAndre, just because like he's got like a 10% higher catch rate. He's catching 70% of his passes on 9-5 targets as like the only guy here now. So like I could see DeAndre, but like he doesn't have that quick twitch. Like he's just, I don't know. It's just, like, I think I still got to go Antonio.
Okay. So I would say DeAndre has a real argument for being better. I think Odell Beckham has an argument for being better. This might sound blasphemous. I think Tyreek Hill has an argument at this point for being better.
But see, with Tyreek Hill, and you could make this argument to an extent with AB, like, okay, you could say Ben Roethlisberger, he's playing with a future Hall of Fame quarterback. But like Tyreek Hill, when he really went to the next level, and he was always like, I called him a generational talent before this year even started. So like, I'm with you that Tyreek Hill is probably better than the perception, right? At least he is than the former perception. But like Antonio Brown is just like without as much speed as Tyreek Hill, like essentially does more on a more consistent basis. I mean, like this a little bit reminds me of like the point I was making. So I totally get you about Alshon Jeffrey earlier this year when it was like, yo, he had all these touchdowns and it was kind of masking the fact that he was very inefficient with last year with Carson Wentz. And like, right. Now you're starting to see that play out. So, I mean, like I said, like I totally take this seriously. I think it's something to think about. But like Antonio's scoring these touchdowns, but he's also catching balls and putting up yards, you know, like it's like, and it's like, he's, it's not like it's inefficient for
him. He isn't, right? No, that's the point. He is inefficient for him. I didn't even mention Julio Jones, right? Julio legit might be better than Antonio Brown.
Nah, honestly, this is a whole nother conversation. So I'll try not to get too deep on a rabbit hole on this, but to me, Julio's always a level below all those guys because number one, it's like he has it's not his fault per se, but he has the advantage of just this body type that just like unstoppable. But yet, even with this body type, he never really managed to be an above average touchdown scorer. And like, he just never manages to really like have the impact that he should, considering the numbers that he puts. It's like, to me, yeah, it's always been like second
team. You know how fluky touchdowns are.
They are, but like, they are fluky. I understand, like, the observing them as a rate statistic is fluky. I do understand that. But, like, that doesn't change the fact that, like, over time, because, like, remember, every statistic is going to stabilize given enough sample size, right? So, like, over time, Julio has kind of proven to be this kind of lackadaisical touchdown score. It's not just like, okay, he had a really unlucky year this year, and he had an unlucky year. It's like, this has been a thing for years now, to the point where, like, there is some predictive ability within that his lower touchdown rate, just as there is in Antonio Brown's heightened one. So like, to me,
yeah,
like,
but I don't know what, so this is like, from a real football perspective, I don't know what the ability to score touchdowns. I don't know if that reflects as much as you think it does back onto the skill a player has. Like, I think Julio Jones's ability from his own goal line to, let's say, like, the opponent's 10-yard line, like, I think that is probably just as reflective of his ability as what he can do in the final 10 yards. And I think in the first 90 yards, he's better than Antonio Brown is.
I would disagree. I get what you're saying, but I just think that there's other there's other ways to kind of get those yards. And I do think those last 10 yards are really important because – I mean, like, for example, I'll give you an example. Like, I believe it was last season when we saw Antonio Brown. No, actually, well, this season too, but we've seen Antonio Brown win games with touchdowns that many receivers don't score. Like, you know, like, was it a game against Baltimore? Was it this year? Was it last year or 2 years ago where he, like, muscled his way on a second effort across the goal line? You know what I mean? Like, it's like, it's like touchdowns make a difference. I think more so for receivers than running backs because, you know, running backs are more right place, right time. But when we talk about a receiver's efficiency, that's just not even just anyone's. Like, it's just like when we talk about running backs and yards per carry, it's like yards per target is some mix of quarterback receiver anyway. So it's like when we talk about Antonio Brown's efficiency, what we're really talking about is like the Antonio Brown Big Ben connection. Just like when we talk about. So it's like, that's why I can't like sit here and like say any, there's like any tangible real like evidence of like any type of like significant drop off other than like, you know, Big Ben is throwing more uncatchable balls to Antonio. You know, Big Ben is kind of, I mean, look at Big Ben's interception rate. Like, you know, completion percentage predicts, you know, interception rate better. So it's like Big Ben's throwing picks. So that means like he's also like, he's not necessarily always on target with the ball. I think a lot of things are playing into it. So I don't know. I think
things are playing into it. So here's the thing. I think it's a conversation worth having. And before my article, no one was having it.
Right.
Like, yeah. Okay. And so there are a few things I think to kind of put a bow on this. Like, I agree that it's not Antonio Brown's efficiency versus the efficiency of his teammates. Like, you can't look at that just in the vacuum of what's happening this year. What I think is significant is that his efficiency with Roethlisberger has gone down this year relative to where it was last year. And everyone else on the team, their efficiency has gone up relative to where it was in the past, right? So, like, I think, like, to me, that is a signal that it's not, like, a Roethlisberger thing of, like, he's bad all the way around. It's something that is localized to their connection. And you can interpret, like, what it is that means. But then when you also place that against the backdrop of Antonio Brown, based on a number of statistics, but Racer, the statistic created by Josh Hermsmeyer, like that's one of them. You could look at the expected points statistic at RotoViz, right? Based on a number of statistics, he's gotten progressively less efficient each season. And like when he's astronomically the most productive player in the world in 2014, if he drops off just a little bit in 2015 and a little bit in 2016, you don't even notice it because he's still so much better than everybody else, right? But when he continues to drop off just a little bit, like at this point, he's now like 66% as efficient as he was in 2014. Like that might continue, like that curve might get even steeper next year. And so, like, I guess, like, this is, like, the warning of, I think if everyone enters 2019 believing absolutely that Antonio Brown is the number one receiver and drafting him as if he is, like, they could be opening themselves up to a lot of liability later.
That's fair. That's definitely fair because, you know, these things, again, like, these wide receivers, especially ones that have played that, you know, physically above the means of, like, anyone else in the league for so long, you know, anytime you have any type of drop off, it could manifest itself. The one final thing I'll say is that, and like this is just more so like I feel like we need more numbers. Like I'd wonder what is the coverage, how is the coverage affecting this? Because one thing that's kind of changed for the Steelers this year compared to years past is that they really don't have a deep threat now. Like James Washington has not worked out. Like even Martavis was on the field last year. He wasn't a huge factor, but he was running clear routes every play. So like now, like I just wonder if perhaps, and like I'm sure, I think maybe Sports Info Solutions, somebody probably has this information, Next Gen. But like, how are like how are the defenders around him on his target point? How is that affecting? You know, because it could just be defenses are spelling out more than ever. Like I don't.
You're right. That is a huge. You know? That's a huge point. Yeah. And like, and we don't have the data on it.
I don't have
it. And maybe like if we dig more, somehow we can find the data on it. Like I would venture to say that with Juju playing as like the best receiver with whom Antonio Brown has ever been paired, Brown shouldn't be facing more defensive attention than he's ever been facing in his career. You know what I mean?
That is fair. But it's a lot of times it's a spatial thing. So it's just the same reason that like the Eagles offense we talked about is kind of struggling because they have Alshon and Tate and all these guys that are good and Ertz, but they don't have Mike Wallace or Torrey Smith. And that actually might have been a bigger loss. So it's like, yes, Juju is amazing, but he's also a guy that you generally have to defend in a certain area of the field that's like not as hard to defend. That's all. But like, yeah, like we have to figure, we'll probably get more data on it, especially now that we talked about it on here. I'm sure somebody will tweet us.
Yeah, I'm sure lots of people are going to tweet us. Letting me know how stupid I am. Okay. God, we are so far off the rails on this show. All right. We have the 2-minute drill, the quote unquote 2-minute drill coming up next, right after Josh Applebaum tells us which game the wise guys are betting this week.
Money talks, and Action Applebaum is all ears. This is the Sharp Report.
NFL Week 14, we are traveling to San Francisco for a 4 o'clock matchup between the 6-6 Denver Broncos and the 2-10 San Francisco 49ers. Public bettors take one look at the records of these two teams and say automatic fade for the 2-10 Niners, but sharps are buying low on San Francisco to keep it close in this one. This game opened with Denver as a -5.5 road favorite. Currently, 71% of spread bets are laying the points with Denver. However, we've seen this line fall from Denver -5.5 to Denver -4. Why would the odds makers drop the line on Denver to give public Broncos backers an easier shot at covering? It's because they got hit with big wise guy sharp action on San Francisco, which caused reverse line movement in favor of San Fran. San Fran also enjoys a really valuable bet first dollar discrepancy. It's one of the most heavily bet games of the weekend, and San Fran is only getting 29% of spread bets, but that accounts for 63% of spread dollars. So that's really telling you that the big sharper wagers are grabbing the points with San Fran, where the average Joe $5 bets are grabbing Denver. We've also seen a ton of steam and reverse line move bet signals on San Fran all across the market. Sharps have been getting down on San Fran, causing 7 separate steam and reverse line moves coming from San Fran +5.5, +6.5, +7, all the way down to San Fran +5, and even a late move on San Fran +4. So even though public bettors are hammering Case Keenum in Denver, sharps are buying low on San Fran. San Fran also finds themselves in a profitable historical spot. They fit the BetLab system pro match pro ATS records. This system is basically buying low on teams that do not cover, going against teams that cover a lot. So when square bettors bet on a team in cash, they're going to want to continue to bet them. When they bet on a team and lose, they're going to want to fade them. And it's human nature, but this just provides great opportunity to buy low on a team that doesn't cover and fade a team that does cover. And this pro ATS records BetLab system is 61.6% ATS. Over 51 units won since 2005 with a 19% ROI. So week 14, even though public bettors are hammering Denver, sharps are buying low on San Fran at home to lose by less than a touchdown.
Okay, that was Josh Applebaum. Be sure to check out his article, The Sharp Report, on the Action Network. Chris, let's run through these remaining non-primetime games. The Eagles at the Cowboys. Cowboys favored by 3.5, a 44-point over-under. The Eagles have won 2 straight games for the first time all year. The Cowboys have won 4 straight and could create a lot of separation in the division with a win.
Philadelphia's pass offense, let's talk about it. Their target leader since the Golden Tate trade, still Zach Ertz, 26%. But their air yard leader, Nelson Aguilar, 26%. Alshon Jeffrey, 3rd on the team in targets since the Golden Tate trade, and 4th on the team in air yards. It's not necessarily going to get easier against the Cowboys. Their best defense tends to be on the perimeter against the bigger receiver types because they have Byron Jones and Chidobe Awuzie out there. And I'll just throw in one of my stats that I love to tweet out. The under, now 27-17, that's 61% all time in games started in the regular season by Dak Prescott.
Yeah, love the Dak under. Patriots at Dolphins, Pats favored by 7.5, a 47-point over-under. The spread is down from 9. 26% of the tickets, 52% of the money is on the Dolphins. The Pats are in the running for a playoff bye. The Dolphins are fighting for the number 6 seed. This is a rematch of the Patriots' 38-7 week 4 home victory.
Yes, yeah, so, I mean, the Patriots, they always struggle in Miami. But the thing that got my attention here, Miami cornerback Xavien Howard looks like he's doubtful, having a knee issue. There's actually word that he might have had surgery. But anyway, he's allowing a 50% completion rate, a 4-7 touchdown and interception ratio, and a 61.6 passer rating this season. So he looks like he's going to miss a game. That's an upgrade for the outsider series, especially Josh Gordon, who he might have shadowed.
Okay. The Antonio-led Steelers at the Raiders. Steelers favored by 10.5, a 51.5 over-under. The spread is down from 13. The Steelers have lost two straight. They're playing their third road game in 4 weeks. And the Raiders are playing sort of for the number one pick in the draft.
So this one is all about, you know, James Conner is going to be out. In that Panthers game, when Conner played only 41% of the snaps, Jalen Samuels played 29% and went 5 carries for 7 yards on the ground, but 3 for 22 through the air with a touchdown on 4 targets. Steven Ridley mixed in for 17% of the snaps, but did get 8 carries for 26 yards, only was targeted once, did not catch that pass. Samuels is the better pass blocker. His pass blocking rating from Pro Football Focus is 82.5 compared to Ridley's 72.4. Samuels has more receiving touchdowns over the last 4 weeks of his rookie season than Steven Ridley, the veteran, has in his entire career. That's 2-0. And then I know you wrote up this under as your favorite bet in our Action Network staff bets this year. I believe it was 10-28 to the under and Steelers road games in the All-Pro AB era. Yeah. So
yeah. Yep. Yeah, I mean, if he were better, they would cover more than that. All right.
God, that's a Big Ben thing.
No. Okay, the Falcons at the Packers. Packers favored by 5, a 50.5 over-under. The spread is up from 4. The total is up from 48. The Falcons have lost 4 straight. The Packers have lost 5 of 6 since their Week 7 bye, and they have fired longtime head coach Mike McCarthy after losing at home to the lowly Cardinals last week.
Yeah, so, I mean, a lot of the focus here is on the Packers and their struggles, but Atlanta's having some struggles of their own. They're averaging just 20 points per game on the road, and they haven't scored 20 points at home or on the road in their last 4 games. So don't overlook the Falcons struggling as well.
The Lions at the Cardinals. Lions favored by 3, a 40.5 over-under. The spread is up from 1. The Lions have lost 5 of 6 games. The Cardinals are coming off a big win against the Packers. They're playing at home after 2 straight road games.
So Christian Kirk, the rookie out for the year, he was responsible for 19% of their targets, 24% of their air yards. Undrafted free agent wide receiver Trent Sherfield, 20% of the air yards last week if you need a desperation pickup.
All right, Bengals at Chargers. Chargers favored by 14, a 47.5 over-under. The Bengals have lost 4 straight games, are without quarterback Andy Dalton and wide receiver A.J. Green. The Chargers have lost only 1 game since Week 4, and they are coming off a big Sunday Night Football win over the Steelers.
So this one looks like Melvin Gordon, pretty iffy to play, probably won't play. So Coach Anthony Lynn had a few quotes to the media about the running back situation. What he said about Austin Ekeler was he's wearing down a little bit. He's a core special teams guy for us, and he's played a lot of running back for us, so he's a little tired. You might see Justin Jackson play a little bit more, and you might see Dietrez Newsome play some this week. In the second half against the Steelers last week in that upset, Jackson 9 touches, Ekeler 8 touches. This is important because Cincinnati versus running backs over their last 4 games, 220.5 total yards per game to running backs and 9 touchdowns over those 4 games. So that's 2.3 per game.
All right. Giants at Redskins. Giants favored by 3.5, a 41-point over under. The spread has moved from +1.5 Giants with the injury to Colt McCoy. The Giants have won 3 of 4 games since their bye. The Redskins are starting Mark Sanchez at quarterback and have lost 3 straight. This is a rematch of the Redskins 20-13 road win in week 8.
I mean, Colt McCoy moving spreads. Jesus. That threw me off. Josh Norman, though, that's always kind of the key question on everyone's mind. Anytime the Giants and the Redskins play, like Josh Norman, Odell Beckham. So Josh Norman this season hasn't been great. 71% completion percentage allowed, 9.6 yards per target allowed, 5 touchdowns to 3 interceptions, and 4 pass breakups per PFF. So I don't think should be any trouble, even if they shadow.
All right, Jets at Bills. I can't believe we're even talking about this game. Bills favored by 3, a 38-point over-under. This is the game no one cares about. The Jets have lost 6 straight, including in Week 10, when they lost 41-10 against the Bills, who are a mediocre 3-4 in quarterback Josh Allen's starts.
So Josh Allen to the two wide receivers they released this week, Kelvin Benjamin and Andre Holmes, who got picked up by the Broncos. To those two guys, he was 18 of 43. That's a 41.8% completion percentage, 239 yards. That's 5.6 per attempt, one touchdown. That's a 2.3% touchdown rate. But to all other receivers he has targeted this season, he's 83 of 140. That's a 59% completion rate. So 59 versus 42. 954 yards to those guys. That's 6.8 yards per attempt. Not great, but, you know, in line with a normal rookie. And four touchdowns, so the touchdown rate increases a little bit, 2.9%. So Josh Allen, I think, a little bit underrated, overlooked, adding a lot on the ground. I think he's a solid fantasy option. I think he's a little better than we expected as well in real life.
Okay. Coming up is our third and long segment on lineup building and slate strategy right after we check in with John Ewing for some trend-based sports betting insights.
Good data is always in fashion. Here's John Ewing with Trend of the Week.
Casual bettors like wagering on the over. The over has received a majority of tickets in more than 80% of NFL games in the BetLabs database since 2003. Odds makers know this and inflate the lines, which creates value for under bettors. Since 2003, it has been profitable to bet the under in high total games, more than 45 points, with significant line movement, at least a one-point move. This system works best late in the season as injuries limit the effectiveness of offenses and quarterbacks facing a divisional opponent for the second time have typically performed worse. Since 2003, betting unders that match this system have hit at a 58%. That's 163-118 record. Three games match for Sunday: Packers-Falcons, Chargers-Bengals, and 49ers-Broncos. A majority of bets are on the over in these games, but sharp bettors should fade the public and wager on the under.
All right, that was John Ewing. Be sure to check out his sports betting articles each week at the Action Network. Chris, we are going to sprint through this section, okay? So I know you like to get long-winded over there. I'm not going to let you.
I wasn't the one that slid the best receiver in football and prompted the extra interlude, but okay.
Oh, man. Okay. All right. Let's talk some strategy. Let's look at the highest owned players in terms of their projections in the Fantasy Labs models. Let's think about who we want to roster, who we might want to pivot away from, who we might want to pivot to. Let's start at quarterback. And let's look at Drew Brees and Jameis Winston playing in that game with a very high total in Tampa Bay. What are your thoughts on those two guys?
Yeah, it kind of goes back to what I said earlier. I think it could underwhelm a little just because of, you know, I think the total's a little bit inflated. Don't love Brees on the road because of the low pass volume I mentioned, you know, 28.5 attempts only per game since Mark Ingram came back. So for me, and then if you look at our trends tool, at home, plus 9.87, plus minus on average in home games this season, but a negative 0.26. on the road. So Brees is not really a guy I'm targeting in cash games. I'm looking more at Deshaun Watson at that 5,900 mark on DraftKings. And I think that's really kind of going to be the guy for me. I could see Cam Newton if we get word that he's fully healthy, or even Aaron Rodgers sitting mm-hmm. at 60 at 6K. But I think Brees and I'd rather play Winston, to be honest with you, than Brees at this point, just because of the volume creates such a low floor that we kind of saw come out against Dallas.
Yeah, I agree with you. And that team is such a pass-heavy team anyway. And then you could easily see how they could maybe have a pass-heavy game script in this contest. Of course, again, the one thing to monitor would be the precipitation. If it's raining in Tampa Bay, obviously that's a game I'd want to stay away from in terms of the quarterbacks for cash games. I mean, regardless, I am interested in Winston in terms of his prop yardage. I think that could end up being good going against the Saints. And as always, I will be using the Fantasy Labs prop tool, which is powered by our industry leading projections created by Sean Corner, aka the Odds Maker. This season, the NFL props with a bet quality of 10 are 207, 92, and 11, good for a smoking hit rate of 67%. To access the tool, subscribe to Fantasy Labs, where you can get a 5-day trial for just $15.95. You mentioned Deshaun Watson going against Indianapolis. We talked about him a little bit. Any other thoughts?
I think, you know, in tournaments, you know, Luck maybe a little bit underowned just because he's coming off the bad game, but, you know, obviously playing out of his mind. Always has low floor, but high ceiling. So I think he's another guy that you might want to jump back on when it comes to tournaments. Big Ben, he's kind of priced up a little bit. Interestingly enough, though, his home road splits this season have actually been fine. Like, he's plus 6.65 average plus minus at home per the trends tool, plus 6.75 on the road on DraftKings per the trends tool. So, you know, no real drop off this year. Don't know if it's noise. Don't know if it's not, but it's the Raiders, so he should be all right.
Yeah, and I think part of that is due to a couple of things. One is obviously the great play of Antonio Brown. And then the second thing is that DraftKings this year really has made, I think, a concerted effort to try to change their salaries based on certain splits or certain matchups. Mm-hmm. And so this year they have, I think, really made an effort to price Roethlisberger down when he's on the road relative to what they've done in the past. So I think that's something just kind of like in the market that has changed this year. Let's talk about running backs and let's stay at that game. Jalen Samuels, who I think is kind of like one of the main storylines of this slate, going against the Raiders. So a good matchup for him, obviously on the road. So not that great of a spot, but his team is favored by a lot. And the important thing is that he's very cheap. So he's someone that a lot of people really might be thinking about putting into their cash game lineups for some salary relief. In our rankings at Fantasy Labs, sorry, at Action Network, we have him ranked both as a running back and as a tight end for people who are playing in leagues where he has dual eligibility. So people can check that out at actionnetwork.com/fantasy. Chris, what are you looking at with Samuels?
You know, I've heard some people kind of hesitant to throw him in there. But like why? Like they said he's going to be the starter. He's a better pass catcher than Ridley. So, you know, you're still getting that kind of the floor of, okay, if things don't go as expected, you know, he can catch some passes. I mean, he's caught a couple touchdowns. He's like been in the end zone, which is, it's always good when you have a track record of production, you know, coming into these kind of games. So, I mean, I don't really see any reason to go again to not play him, you know, at this point in cash games. Like, mm-hmm. going against the worst defense, essentially, in the league. And I expect him to split work with Ridley. Maybe even Ridley out carries him. But when you add that pass game, and he's just a better player. I mean, he's a good player. Like, he's like, the fact that he's playing tight end or at least has played tight end, is listed as a tight end as well, as like, should show you that he's a versatile guy that can do many things. So I'd be very excited to throw him in my lineups.
Yeah, he was an all-around playmaker in college. Jeffrey Wilson, I think some people will either consider going with Samuels or going with Wilson as a, you know, a cheap guy. And some people might even look to put both of them in their lineups. What are you thinking with this matchup here as like the injury fill-in to the injury fill-in?
He kind of catches the short end of a stick because you also have Justin Jackson here. Price is essentially in the same spot as Wilson. And I think that on FanDuel, Jackson is actually 4,500 on FanDuel. I expect Justin Jackson to essentially kind of get Melvin Gordon's workload and Eckler to kind of go back to being like Eckler. So I would probably play Samuel and Jackson over Wilson just because I still do have respect for this Denver Broncos defense. But if for some reason Jackson isn't an option anymore, or, you know, Gordon's going to play, or they kind of go back to saying Eckler is going to be like the lead guy again or whatever not. I think, you know, Wilson just at that price, you know, 5,600 on FanDuel, what is it? 3,800 on DraftKings. You know, you just kind of take the free square at the volume if you need it. But I'd still rather play Samuels because I think he has a better matchup and I think he's probably more talented.
Mm-hmm. All right, a few expensive guys here. Tell me which one you like the most. Christian McCaffrey at Cleveland, Ezekiel Elliott versus the Eagles, Saquon Barkley at Washington, Alvin Kamara at Tampa Bay.
Give me Christian just because, like, first we mentioned it, you know, Cleveland weakness against the run. Carolina really needs this football game. You know, Denzel Ward could take out one of the wide receivers, maybe DJ Moore. Like, I think Christian McCaffrey's in for, and we've just seen monster game. Like, Christian McCaffrey has, like, Zeke has been consistent, Barkley's been consistent, but I mean, McCaffrey's had like 50 point fantasy games. Like, it's, I think you got to favor him.
All right, let's go to wide receiver. The guy who catches my eye is Chris Godwin going against the Saints. Obviously, this is under the assumption that DeSean Jackson does not play. What are your thoughts on Godwin?
Love Godwin. DeSean Jackson might not they're talking about he might not play for the rest of the year. So.
Right.
Yeah, I love Godwin, but love Adam Humphries as well. Because the way you attack the Saints is in the slot first and foremost. So I think Adam Humphrey's great matchup. I think it's kind of a repeat of last week where it's like Mike Evans might be a little bit overvalued. You know, Mike Evans hasn't quite been like that, this target monster that we've come to expect, whether it's been Jameis or Fitz. A little better with Fitz, actually, but I think you want to target both of these Bucs receivers again, just like last week, Godwin and Humphreys. Godwin has huge upside because he's going to play on the outside, you know, pretty much every snap with Deshaun out. And we saw that, you know, the 100-yard game last week. I think he has ability to go deep. He has ability in the red zone. So just a good all-around spot for these Bucs guys.
All right, someone else who has a high ownership projection is Keenan Allen in a great matchup against the Bengals, who have just been really exploitable on defense recently. What are your thoughts with him?
I like Keenan Allen. I think I was on the Keenan side in that whole AJ Green.
Yeah, you were.
Yeah, but I mean, which obviously
looking good now.
It's looking good now, but I mean, but I do worry a little bit just about the volume in this game because, you know, last week we all kind of, again, national TV game. We kind of have, you know, we're recently biased by this monster volume game from Keenan Allen. But that was in a game that was a 30-23, where is it, 30, whatever the score was, you know, high scoring game where they needed to put up points. This is a game where they're 14-point favorite. Phillip Rivers not throwing the ball very much. I believe he's around 32 or so attempts per game. So the one thing I just worry about is volume here to really take him over the top. I'd probably save him more for a tournament play, maybe, you know, if the game is a little closer or as like a leverage off Jackson, who I think will be pretty highly owned if the week kind of plays out with Gordon ending up sitting out. So that's my kind of feeling on him.
All right. One guy that a lot of people are going to consider is Courtland Sutton at San Francisco, especially now with Emmanuel Sanders being out. What are your thoughts on him?
You know, another guy who I think, you know, the volume is there. So it's like you don't really – at that, like, he's down at 4,500. I don't think you know, I don't hate it, but I always do worry about those situations where you have kind of a not that great quarterback and you have a receiver who is now going to be getting all of the defensive attention for essentially the first time. And there's not really many options around him to take that heat off. So, and also this could be a low scoring game because, you know, we talked about it earlier. This is just too, you know, San Francisco's not a very good team, not likely to put a lot of pressure on Denver either way in terms of scoring a lot of points. So he's another guy that because there's all this value at running back, which is still like the position where you can be a little more certain of what you're getting from a running back. I probably try to like stay off Sutton if I could, because I could see a lot of situations where he ends up being bad chalk. Like, remember, even when Demaryius went down, like Sutton, like he was putting together like these like halfway useful fantasy games, but he never really had this explosion until it was last week. So, you know, I think I see some downside with Sutton.
Okay. A few expensive guys here. Michael Thomas at Tampa Bay, Julio Jones at Green Bay, Devontae Adams versus Atlanta, DeAndre Hopkins versus Indianapolis, and Odell Beckham at Washington. Out of those guys, who do you like the most?
Devontae Adams. I think that, like, first of all, Devontae Adams has been amazing just, like, this year. Like, he's another guy. I mean, it's not just Aaron Rodgers. Like, Devontae Adams, you know, his ability to kind of adjust to what Aaron Rodgers is doing out there it has been just spectacular, I think. He's a man amongst boys in that receiving core. And this Atlanta defense is, you know, bottom four against the pass. And they have a new coach. So I think you might see, you know, even – smarter, more creative offense, but I think either way that just helps Adams, and he's like almost an automatic touchdown bet at this point. So give me Devontae.
All right, a tight end. There are two expensive guys and then two cheaper guys who are kind of standing out in our ownership projections. You have Zach Ertz and Travis Kelce on the higher side, and then a little bit further down you have Eric Ebron and George Kittle. What are your thoughts on them?
Well, you know, the Houston Texans, aside from David Njoku last week, have been getting just demolished by tight ends for most of the year. So I think assuming Ebron plays, I know he popped up on the injury report, but assuming he plays, I'd still like going back to Ebron in the spot, though. He's a little pricey. So, I mean, you know, I probably end up in cash games still going with somebody like Gronk there at 4,800 because Ebron is 5,700. I mean, Miami is a team that I generally do like to target with like backs and tight ends and whatnot. So I have no problem playing Gronk down there at 4,800. I think Ertz tournament play, Kelsey great tournament play. Generally don't prefer to pay up that much for tight ends in cash games. Although this week, I think you can do it because you could conceivably start three running backs on DraftKings that are under 4K. You could also, you know, there's Sutton. So there are options, which I don't think it's a terrible move to pay up at tight end. But, you know, you have Kelsey probably, you know, the Baltimore Ravens have been somewhat vulnerable to tight ends, but it's still a matchup where you don't quite expect the Chiefs to score as many points as they usually do. And then, you know, Ertz going against Dallas, I think you can feel pretty confident about him, but that's another situation where, you know, those kind of games tend to go under, second divisional matchup, Dak Prescott. So I like the discount here with Gronk, to be honest.
To your point on Gronk, Peter Jennings, obviously CSU Ram 88, tweeted out earlier, based on the data in the Fantasy Labs Trends tool, this is the cheapest that Gronk has ever been on DraftKings.
Oh baby.
So, you know, it's like, if you're looking to buy low, this is the time.
I mean, he has three touchdown upside. Like, I mean, I know he's been, it's like, why not? I mean, tight end's been such a wasteland anyway that, like, for all we know, you end up paying up for Zach Ertz and he gets like two catches. So, I mean, like, yeah, give me Gronk. Yeah.
All right, we're going to close out the show with our fourth and goal segment, previewing Sunday Night Football. But first, let's kick it to Ian Harditz, who runs through the key Week 14 coverage situations.
The press, the jam, and the five-yard bump. Ian Harditz brings you Dance of the Divas.
Week 14 features seven key shadow matchups. Robbie Anderson versus Tre'Davious White. Anderson did roast the Bills' number one cornerback for a 25-yard touchdown last season, but it's tough to get behind anyone in this passing game with Sam Darnold expected back under center. Odell Beckham Jr. will take on Josh Norman. Redskins' number two cornerback Quentin Dunbar is done for the season, so we can expect Norman to shadow every week moving forward. OBJ has won this matchup in three of their four career rivalry games. Mike Evans will take on Marshawn Lattimore. Evans obviously dominated their first matchup, but make sure to check the weather on this one. There's a very high chance of precipitation. The over-under has been in a free fall all week. The Browns and Panthers will feature three shadow matchups between the Browns wide receivers and Panthers corners. Antonio Callaway will face off against speedy rookie Dante Jackson. Rashard Higgins will see plus size number one James Bradbury, and Jarvis Landry will see nickelback Captain Munderland. Devontae Parker and Kenny Stills will face off against Stephon Gilmore and Jason McCourty. Patriots cornerbacks are capable of dominating these matchups. Neither Parker nor Stills has gained over 60 yards in their previous matchups against New England, dating back to last season. Kenny Galladay and Patrick Peterson should see plenty of each other, but Patrick Peterson doesn't go inside, and Galladay has lined up in the slot in 41% of his snaps over the past 2 weeks. Tyler Lockett will face off with Xavier Rhodes. Lockett has a type of dynamic ability that can give a larger cornerback like Rhodes problems, but much like some of these other teams, it's tough to see too much pass volume coming out of Seattle. My favorite matchup of the week is Cortland Sutton versus the 49ers. Even before the Emmanuel Sanders injury, Sutton was set up exceptionally well in this game. Richard Sherman does not travel. He does not move across the field, so we're expecting Sutton to line up across from liability Akello Witherspoon on roughly 55% of his snaps Sunday.
All right, that was Ian. Be sure to check out his wide receiver cornerback matchup column each week at the Action Network. Chris, Sunday Night Football, the Rams at the Bears. Rams favored by 3, a 51.5 over-under. The Rams have locked up the NFC West and are playing for the number one seed. The Bears are coming off a loss to the lowly Giants, but Mitch Trubisky is practicing in full and expected to be back. What are your thoughts here?
I like this spot as a rebound spot for the Bears. I think, people didn't expect them to lose to the Giants. And now, you know, Trubisky's coming back. That's a big upgrade for them, especially in a situation like this with a defense, I think, that is exploitable, but that can also get a pass rush and collapse the pocket from the inside as well. So I think just having Trubisky's mobile ability back in the lineup is going to play a key role for Chicago. I think that without Cooper Kupp, I think this Rams offense is a little bit more vulnerable. Going on the road here to Chicago, I think that could pose a little bit of a problem for the Rams. So I'm getting 3 points with the Bears. I am taking that. If you look at John Ewing actually had a good trend in the in the betting guide for us at the Action Network this week for this game, betting against teams that have won more than 80% of their games in December or later, 134, 101, and 2. That's a 57% hit rate against the spread going back to 2003. That was one of the reasons, you know, betting against the Chiefs last week, you know, a few spots where you wouldn't really think to bet against these teams kind of tends to pay off. But I think the Bears have a chance to win this game. So that I'm going with the Bears here.
Yeah, I'm going to take the other side. I'll go with the Rams. And if it were 3.5, I would be much less interested in taking this. Mm-hmm. But knowing that I do have the opportunity to push at 3, mm-hmm. you know, just a little more security there. And, you know, ordinarily, I would be interested in taking the team total. But I do respect the Bears defense. But I, you know, I also think that I feel comfortable enough taking the Rams because I don't have all that much. I don't know. Like, I still think that Trubisky is developing. You know what I mean? Like, he's not – I don't think he's, like, the player he's going to be yet or that they want him to be yet. And Aqib Talib is back. You know, I think they were easing him into action last week. I expect him to play more snaps this week. So, like, I think we're going to see a better version of the Rams. Trubisky, I think, will – I don't think they would play him if he weren't healthy. But, you know, like returning from injury, being off a couple of weeks, like I could see there being a little bit of rust. And I don't know. I just like I think the Rams are better than a lot of other teams. I think the Bears have done a really good job of coming back from, like, they're playing a last place schedule. You know what I mean? Like, I think they've done a good job of maximizing what they've had this year. But I just don't see them as being 3 points less than the Rams. I think they are more like 6 or 7 points less than the Rams. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's definitely fair. I think for me, kind of the equalizer is like it's in Chicago.
Yeah.
It's in the cold weather, which Jared Goff hasn't really had that much experience with. And like just from watching this Rams offense, I think I mentioned a few weeks ago, they had kind of struggled without Cooper Kupp at times. And then, you know, they obviously had the big game against the Chiefs, which you kind of expected. But even in who they played last week? Detroit, right? Even in that game, like, they were pretty sluggish for a good while. Like, that first half, the Rams didn't really look like the Rams either. So it's like just seeing the fact that, like, without Kupp, this team can be mortal at times and they can go through stretches where they're not just scoring points on every single drive or every other drive against a defense that's as good as Chicago in Chicago. It just gives me a little bit of pause. So I think it's like I think it's a little bit more of a toss-up, and so I like getting those three. But I hear, I mean, the Rams are the better team, no question about it. But you know, you have Matt Nagy on the other side, you know,
yeah,
guy that can kind of not match with Sean McVay, but you know, get in the same,
yeah, he's good,
he's in the neighborhood.
Yeah. Like he's definitely done a really good job with that offense. And one thing to your point, I mean, it's their second game for the Rams, their second game on the road. You know, so not an ideal circumstance for them at all. Okay, Chris, you are going to be breaking down the Monday night game with Ian on our next show. Any final words?
Let's get this money and let's give this money because it's the holiday season.
All right, that's going to do it for this Friday episode of the Action Network NFL Podcast. Be sure to rate, review, and subscribe for all of our upcoming episodes. For Chris Raybon, I'm Matthew Freeman. Matt at the Oracle. See you again next episode.